Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So we opened the show by a team signing a backup running back?
I wouldn't have cared.
What's next? What's going to happen to Boston Scott?
No, but he's a good enough person where if he decides to sign with the Eagles, he won't screw them over and go, "Oh, I'm going to go to somebody else now." That's my only problem with it. Other than that, I could care less.
Sam Sessoms goes into the transfer portal? No. Sandy Barber retires? No. Right. Okay. Merrill re-signs a 3-year contract? No. We go with a backup running back for the Washington Commanders that has about as much an impact on the division as the fourth string safety in training camp?
We went through all those things before I got to that. You just walked in on me talking about one J.D. McKissic.
You're struggling right now. Let's admit it. You're struggling. Killing us. There's some issues here.
Oh, my almighty!
There's some issues here we got to talk about. I'm worried about you. I thought you'd be happy about Merrill.
Oh, I'm pumped about Merrill. He deserves it.
I'm concerned. Right? You went for the negative first. It's telling me something. Like, if you're taking that personality test, this is telling me something. We need to talk. Hey, by the way, August 10th is going to be the Purdy tournament this year, by the way.
All right. We're back to the August slot. Okay.
I feel like I have to tell you everything that's going on. Like, you're really up on what's happening with the Washington Commanders. But that, so far, that's it. It's kind of a struggle of a show today for you. I don't understand. There are other things going on besides the Commanders roster. You've got to get yourself together.
It's going to be interesting tomorrow when on my phone.
Get yourself together. The phone, the station has a TV somewhere, don't they?
Yeah, but not with what I
just
need to watch the games.
Just set up a remote, you're fine. The games are on your computer.
That's what I'm saying. I'm going to be watching the games on my phone and my computer tomorrow.
So,
yeah.
In other words, you're not going to be paying attention to the show again.
I can multitask.
Is that based on recent evidence, or is that...
Well...
I mean, if you want, we could bring the replacement in, but, I mean, he wanted to talk about Fantasy IndyCar League NCAA tournaments going on. Oh, no. You won't believe the speed they get in Texas, right? And that's just on the interstates. All right, so let's get to our play-by-play call of the day.
Now I feel like a celebrity.
I soaked in Rex's jacket and tie combination. I think it was pretty spectacular.
Hey,
tonight.
The glasses were on point. Whoa!
Jackson Davis on the alley-oop from Johnson.
Woo! Talk about climbing the ladder.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and you know I love Tommy, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Lavin, Avery Johnson, I only met once when he was the coach at Alabama. And I know that they're trying to promote the studio, but like, the game was good enough. That was Trace Jackson Davis last night. Again, we said going in that they didn't have a matchup for him, and they didn't. For Wyoming, their big problem is, and I saw Wyoming play, I think, 3 or 4 times on TV this season. Maldonado was a very, very good player. But everybody kept saying, he's the player, nobody, a great player that nobody's heard. I'm like going, he's really good, but I didn't think he was great. He turned it over 10 times last night. Like him. I don't mean Wyoming turned it over 10 times. He turned it over 10 times. Tonight, the key, Notre Dame's three-point game. They're 14-1 when they make 10 threes or better. Rutgers is very good at defending the three. Harper, especially Caleb McConnell. Caleb McConnell is a really good defender. And Harper's a very good defender. Geo Baker, I don't know if he could defend Luke. But he could score over Luke. I'm telling you, Luke needs to work on, like, you know, angles.
And catching the ball, but we're working on that. But you're right. He can get away from people. He can juke some people. He's juked me a couple times.
All right, so now we've set the bar low. What else are we doing? All right. NCAA Wrestling Championship. Little Caesars in Detroit. Out of nowhere, I feel like ordering a pepperoni and mushroom. I don't know about you. Let's bring in Jeff Byers from Detroit. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
I hope you're having a good time so far.
I will say I've actually been pleasantly surprised with the revitalization efforts here in downtown Detroit. And we went over this morning to check out the arrangements. And
it's a nice arena.
Little Caesars Arena is a really neat arena. I do think it's going to be a great venue for the fans that are here.
Yeah, that's where the Pistons and the Wings play, by the way. So just so everybody knows. And it's the first time they've been together, the Wings and the Pistons, because, they used to play Cubba Hall, the Olympia, and then, Joe Louis Arena, and then they were up in Pontiac for a while, Auburn Hills, so now they have the same place. You always get a sense for a team when you're around them. I can tell when, just being around the teams, are they in a good place or not? Going to Indianapolis, I was like, wow, they're in a good place, right? What's your sense? You're around them. What's your sense? They in a good place?
Yeah, I think they are, Steve. As is the norm here under Cale Sanderson, they're just a relaxed team. You don't see guys getting uptight or, hey, I need to go over in the corner by myself. But it just is a team that's loose. They like kidding around with each other. They're obviously focused in on the task at hand, and there are a couple of guys working on, some specific things that they want to try to improve on technique-wise or little adjustments here. But at the roll around this morning over at the arena, just a very loose team, a lot of fist bumping with each other and others in the entourage are just, again, I think they're ready to go. I think they're dialed in, but, over the years here, what we've seen with this program under Cale is when they're relaxed and they're just kind of themselves, that's when they've tended to be at their best here at the end of the year.
All right. It is. You talk about being in a good place. It's also about matchups. So when you look at just the early bracket, is there a comfort that you're seeing just from your observation in some of the matchups, or are there a couple early matchups where you sit back and say, well, may have to somehow figure out a way to survive that one?
Yeah, I think, as we've talked about, the seeding at from Penn State's perspective, at 125 and 157 is obviously very tough. We're going to get at both of those weights the a former national champion and the number one seed for the Penn State kids in those bouts, and obviously that's problematic for anybody in terms of the matchups. I do think when you look at the first couple of rounds, for the kids that are in the top four seeds here for Penn State, there isn't anything on paper there that's flashing red alert for you. I think Penn State feels pretty good about getting all of those guys through to at least the quarterfinals, and then again, I think matchup wise, I think they they have five guys that, again, have a good path. Never an easy path here at the national tournament, but I think they have five guys with very manageable routes with their skill set and with the matchups to get into the NCAA finals here Saturday night.
All right. So we've talked about Hildebrand and what his deal is, because he's got to go 17 from Lehigh, and then he goes right to the number one seed overall. You've watched him. Does he have the capability of knocking off the number one guy?
He does, Steve. But what it's going to come down to, and I was kind of watching him in particular when you were asking about are they in a good place, and body language-wise, I loved what I was seeing, because it was not what we were seeing even after just the first round at the Big Ten tournament, or the quarterfinal round, his first match. But, you know, he seems loose. I think he knows what he's capable of doing. I do think the matchup with Soriano this season helped him, and I really think for Drew, it's going to come down in that particular matchup. And, you know, again, that's presuming he gets past the first round, which is no guarantee.
Right.
But
right.
That matchup with Soriano, I think, is an intriguing one. I mean, Soriano is definitely rightfully going to be significantly favored. But I think there's some little adjustments that they want to make in terms of the approach. I think they like the way Hildebrand weathered the storm in the first period in their first meeting, and that's going to be kind of the key again if they do meet in that second round. And Hildebrand, I mean, it's going to come down to whether Hildebrand can get his ride going, in my mind. If he can get a good ride going on Soriano, then I think he's got a real shot here. And Hildebrand has a great ride. It's just that Soriano is among the best in the country at just getting out quickly from bottom, and that's what he did the first time they met. So I think Hildebrand has a chance. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm expecting him to win that bout, but I do think he'll be right there. And you know, if you can give yourself an opportunity to be within a takedown in that final 60 seconds, again, then it's in your hands, and you just got to go make it happen.
For example, in basketball, Devontae Jones, the point guard for Michigan, is in concussion protocol. He's not going to be able to play in the opening round in Indy. He's out. Well, the Big Ten Wrestling Championships had a few prominent people not go, you know, especially in the final. Any word on whether everybody is available, or is everybody waiting on some of these guys? And I don't know.
Yeah.
Penn State's not in that boat, but others are.
No, and I think, Steve, it's going to be really interesting to see. I think everybody's going to at least give it a go. You know, I've been talking to some different people, and I'm getting different answers on a couple of the kids and kind of where they're at. I think there's some real concern with Jaden Ironman and with Michael Kemmer of Iowa. I think both those guys are warriors, and they're going to battle through anything. But I just don't know that with Kemmer's shoulder and with Ironman's knee, if, you know, how effective they're going to be against the top-end competition. And then the one that, to me, is just going to be very interesting to see how he comes out here is Sebastian Rivera of Rutgers. Because if he is on, Steve, I mean, he's right there with Nick Lee, in my mind, is
yes,
and Ironman. I mean, those three guys are just heads and shoulders above the rest of the field to me. But it's whether Rivera's healthy, and he's the one that I'm getting different answers on, where you know, apparently he had his knee scoped sometime within the last month. And that's not an easy thing. I realize it's not a major procedure, but to try to come back and compete at this level against the caliber of competition we're talking about, I don't know. But it's his last go-around, so he's obviously going to do everything he can. And, you know, we'll see. But those are the three guys that I think, you know, there's the most intrigue around and the most uncertainty as to what type of a performance they'll actually be able to give here.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because it was just a scope. You know, you and I both hear that.
Yeah.
In other words, it was invasive.
Yeah.
Which means you still have to come back from being cut, okay, in a couple of different places.
Yeah.
It's not as easy as people think. The bonus point possibility, obviously, is something we talk about all the time, Jeff. So when we talk about that, I'll go back to the Big Ten. I did ask you this question, but I'll repeat it. Between Michigan, Iowa, and Penn State, as it stands with the health of their current lineups, which one has the chance at bonus points?
Yeah, I think it is Penn State. I just think when you look at the consistency with which the nine guys that are here have put up bonus points throughout the course of their season and careers, I think it's seven of the weight classes Penn State will get at least a bonus point. And I think at least six of them, they're going to have a couple of bouts where they get bonus points. And listen, they have a couple of kids in this lineup that are capable of getting bonus points every time out, no matter who the competition is. So, you know, that's and we've seen it over the course of the years of the NCAA tournament. Those bonus points, when there is tight competition with teams toward the top, those bonus points can really start to separate the teams. And, you know, it's not that that Iowa and Michigan and some other teams that will be contending can't get bonus points, but I think, you know, Nick Lee has been a virtual bonus point machine.
Right.
You know, Greg Kirkfleet, outside of the, you know, top three guys at the weight class aside from him, I mean, he's been bonusing just about everybody else as well. And then, again, all of the title contenders here for Penn State, you know, I think are certainly looking for bonus points, and you're pretty much expecting it in those first couple of rounds.
All right, yeah, and that's where you can get a lot of the bonus points, because when the cream meets the cream, you know, it's going to be normally a tight, lower scoring to begin with anyway.
Sure.
Okay, so now let's get to when you're Penn State and you have the label of that across your chest, you automatically have a target. You're the biggest guy they're going to wrestle the entire time because of the label on the front. When you add in Aaron Brooks being the national champion, the defending national champion, he finally got clipped a bit. I didn't say beat, he got clipped a bit, okay? So he's had that now where he has to be the guy that bounces back from it. I know you know he's in a great spot, but what does he need to do to then go back to the top of the podium?
Yeah, I don't think a lot, to be honest with you, Steve. His attitude coming off of that loss was terrific. I mean, it really was. And, you know, he talked about it. It is basically a blessing to him that it happened then and that he, you know, knows now that he has to just kind of focus in on his own game, not worry about what the officials are doing or not doing that he thinks that they should be, and just stay in the moment and dialed in on what it is you're trying to achieve. And I think he's of all of the kids in this lineup, he is the one I'm least worried about in terms of the
right
approach coming into the tournament. And it was kind of fun. You know, you talk about Penn State kind of having that target on the back. When we were over at the arena earlier today, Aaron and Kale were rolling around, and the number of people who just tried to casually look and wait, is that the two legends rolling around with each other? And, you know, you can't help but get drawn to
yeah,
to checking it out. But you watch the way Aaron is preparing, and just some of the little things he's working on in preparation for it. Again, I know he is hoping, and he's not taking anything for granted, but he's hoping that he gets to wrestle Amin again. And more out of a respect thing. I mean, it's not like I'm going to get you back. He wants to test himself
right
against the best, and he knows darn well that right now Miles Amin is the best aside from himself in that way.
Right.
Class.
I mean, the best wants to meet the best. I mean, that's what you want. That's what we were talking about Kemmerer before. You're talking about him. Well, guess what? You know, the people who aren't worth their salt in the field don't want him to wrestle. The people worth the salt in the field want to face him because there's a level of respect.
Yeah.
Kale has the ability, like, when you work, you work. But at the same time, it's not the end of the earth. So he will lighten it up a bit. He's done dodgeball, for example, with the guys before they've gone on a trip. He's done things like that. And what did he do? Do you know what he did this time with them, just to kind of loosen and lighten the mood a little bit before they took off?
Yeah, I don't think there's been anything specific. I mean, they do their games before practices every day anyway, and that's continued. And, they definitely have fun with that. And there's been some banter on the plane about some cheating going on in the various dodgeball games by coaches.
Well, of course the coaches cheated.
When
you're at a certain age, the skills are eroding a bit.
That is exactly right. I think they, again, they're just loose, and they're, I think, just excited about the opportunity. And I think you're exactly right, Steve. The one thing that I think these kids realize, and Aaron Brooks really just exemplifies it to me, is listen, they are putting everything they can into the sport. They love the sport. They love to compete. They want to win. They understand that win or lose, coming out of this tournament, they have a whole long life in front of them and a lot of other things that they're going to have to worry about down the road. And I think that that understanding and realization that, you know, yes, again, you're putting a lot into this, and there's a reason that you're doing that. You want the results. But if you don't get them and you gave everything you had, so be it. And then you take those lessons and you apply them out of the so-called real world. And I think, by and large, the overwhelming majority of kids that have come through Cal's program have that perspective.
No doubt.
And I think, you know, guys like, you know, David Taylor and Bo Nickel and Aaron Brooks are just guys that truly live it. Again, they're doing everything they can to prepare themselves. They want to compete at the highest level. They want to win. And when they lose, and it will happen from time to time, you know, they go back and try to work on the little things that can make them a little better. But they don't, you know, they don't sit around and sulk. They don't throw headgears. It's not the end of the world to them, because they realize that there's going to be other things that they're going to have to do above and beyond wrestling tomorrow and moving forward.
And finally, to do this in front of a full house.
Steve, I think it's everything. I really do. It was just so surreal last year in St. Louis. Just I was just talking to a friend about this today, where you just weren't seeing hardly anyone, where normally, again, you're running into all kinds of people wearing all kinds of wrestling gear and representing the various schools. And I just think for the kids, and again, they said all the right things. It's still wrestling. We'd wrestle in front of an empty arena. Right. And, you know, I get it. They would. They did. But it is electrifying when you get 18,000-20,000 fans oohing and aahing at every move. And, you know, that Saturday night with the Parade of Champions and the entire spectacle, it's just a wonderful opportunity for these kids to be able to kind of revel in the glory. And it is the thing I'm probably most looking forward to, is actually hearing the roars from the stands throughout the course of the tournament.
Enjoy every second of it. You'll be brilliant as always, but I want you to enjoy it. Jeff, thank
you. Well, I will definitely enjoy it. I always do, and pinch myself that I have the opportunity to be here again.
Well, the fans are fortunate they have you to listen to every year again. Thank you, Jeff, so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Steve.
Jeff Byers, NCAA Wrestling Championships, not once brought up J.D. McKissick. Unless he's wrestling at 184, I don't think his name came up. You okay there?
I'm good. I'm ready for some more hoops tonight.
Is J.D. McKissick playing?
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a fabulous service department, whether it happens to be diagnostics, inspections, or routine. They take care of it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And great to join us from the Reading Eagle, the always outstanding Rich Scarsella. Rich, great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Sandy Barber announces that this summer she will step aside and retire. What were your thoughts when you heard that news?
I was somewhat surprised, Steve, in that down in Tampa a couple days before the game when she had her press conference and she was asked about her future plans, and she said she had a year and a half left on her contract and indicated then that she felt good and that she wanted to stay. So I'm a little surprised, but you also have to remember there's a new president coming in, and you know, maybe Dr. Bindaputi wanted her own AD. You know, that's a possibility. But I was surprised.
And so when somebody does leave a job, everyone starts talking about the legacy of that individual. How would you characterize Sandy's 8 years?
Well, I would. It has to be successful, in my opinion. I mean, she's done a lot of really good things. I mean, let's start with the improvement of the facilities, Lash Building, and you know, Panzer Field, and you know, Lash Building is being renovated. I think, and now Morgan Academic Center, I think, is a big thing that she got accomplished.
Yes.
And I think she's done well. I mean, I think her. You know, she didn't hire James Franklin, as we all know. That happened before she was hired. But, you know, the three hires, I think there are three most important hires, were the two basketball jobs and the women's volleyball, you know, to replace Russ Rose. And, I mean, it's too early to give a complete grade, but the signs are pointing in the right direction with those three hires.
Right. And, again, Panzer Stadium, you know, an investment in facilities, Lash, as you talked about. Look, you're trying to keep up with what other people are doing out there right now. And the pandemic did not stop any of that. And that's the other element, too. Guiding an athletic department through a pandemic, and they kept, and you saw the numbers, they kept the losses to, I think, about as low as they could, about three times less than what Ohio State did.
Yeah, I think she managed navigated things very well during what had to be a tremendously trying situation, especially from a financial point of view. I think she's done a really good job. It's sometimes it's hard to believe it's only 8 years. It feels like it could be a little longer, but I think overall, she's done a really good job, and she's one of the most powerful women in all of college sports, and I think a very influential person as well. And, you know, it was clear, it's always been clear to me, that she's been very supportive of Penn State student athletes, and you know, I like her. I we don't get to talk to her as much as some of us would like, but I do like her, and you know, I think overall she's done a really good job. It's going to be interesting to see where the new president, the board of trustees, where they'll find the next president, or excuse me, the next athletic director.
And there will be, obviously, for the next athletic director, you now have to guide Penn State athletics through the 20s and maybe even into the early 30s, depending on the age of the individual. What kind of challenges, and this is a very broad one, what kind of challenges does someone face in the environment we have in collegiate sports right now?
Well, I think the biggest issue right now, and I think going forward, is NIL and how to manage that and maximize that for your athletes and for your programs, and you know, and also, you know, to attract businesses, sponsors, whatever, who want to associate themselves with your athletes. And I think that's the biggest thing going forward, more than anything else. I mean, we could talk about academics, and we could talk about you know, television rights and media rights and so on and so forth, and facilities and, you know, the improvements. The second biggest to me after NIL is the what happens with Beaver Stadium, and how much improvement is made there. But there are a lot of things that are going to be on the plate of the next athletic director.
Right. No question about that. You know, and Penn State football will begin spring practice on Monday, so that'll be the next step on a field or a court for anybody. You know, obviously you've got the wrestling championships this weekend. So yeah. right out of the gate, you know, what are some questions? If you had a chance to sit down and ask James Franklin, I don't know, let's pick three questions. What three would you ask?
Well, I go back to a column I wrote in Florida. I think it's going to be. I would ask him about the quarterback situation. How, you know, what exactly are his plans? It seems like it's going to be Sean Clifford to be the starter. How long does he plan to stay with Sean if he hits some bumps in the road? Does he go to Christian Veiu or does he go to Drew Aller? I mean, you know, that's a big thing. The quarterbacks. How much pressure is he feeling? Because, Steve, I think coming off these last two seasons, and I'm with you, the 2020 season, I feel you can throw out the window because of everything that happened. But the fact is, he's 11-11 in his last 2 years, and I think, right. And he has a new contract, but I think there's going to be a lot of expectations to be back in contention for Big Ten championships. Third, I would think just, you know, Manny Diaz replacing Brent Pry. I think that, I mean, Brent, that's a big thing. Brent Pry has been such a big part of James Franklin's success. And, you know, now that he's the head coach at Virginia Tech and Manny Diaz is replacing him, you know, how does that work out? Because obviously James and Brent were very close, and sort of, you know, had a real feel for each other. So how does that work out, that relationship between James and Manny? So they're my three.
Right. Okay, you mentioned the part about COVID. It's interesting because John Calipari was talking about this the other day because Kentucky last year did not make the NCAA tournament. He talked about, you know, all the trauma of going through COVID and trying to navigate, and they just didn't do it very well. Now they're back this season in the NCAA tournament as a number two seed. So that's in the rearview mirror. The contract's in the rearview mirror. What do you think that can mean for James Franklin about, you still have to manage COVID a little bit, but he's not going to get questions about his contract and nothing about COVID. What can that mean?
Well, I mean, there shouldn't be any distractions, really, except what happens on the football field, you would hope. And, I mean, you know, you know James Franklin a little, you know, you know him better than me, but I think I know him well enough. He wants to win as badly as anybody, and he wants it to happen yesterday, and he wants to get back on that winning track. So I think that'll help. Certainly it'll help. And certainly a freshman class, highly regarded freshman class, will help. But you're still being measured. You're still measuring yourself against Ohio State, and that's going to be interesting to see where that gap is. Even though the Buckeyes didn't win the division last year, they remain the measuring stick. And I mean that to me is going to be interesting to see how this all plays out this season. Like I said, I don't know. I mean, he has a new contract, but what happens if Penn State goes 7-5 again in the regular season? I don't know how that's going to go over with the fan base.
Sean Clifford, we all know, is coming back for year 6. But it's going to be the first time he's done it with the same offensive coordinator in back-to-back years. Okay, so what do you think the benefits can be that he's in the same system, same language, and has not had to make any changes for the first time in his career?
I've got to think that will not be an issue, him adjusting to Mike Yurcich or Mike Yurcich adjusting to him. I think after everything they went through last year, I think they know what each is capable of and what each of them can do and what each of them can expect from each other. For Sean's sake and for Penn State's sake, I hope that there's an improvement, and you know, I just don't know. I don't know, but you know, you would hope that he maintains his health, because again, we don't know what he was playing with most of last season.
Right.
I think that has to be a plus, that this is the second year with Mike Yurcich. And I think there's a lot of pressure on Mike Yurcich, too, because he came here very heralded, and, you know, the numbers didn't bode well, the offensive numbers last year, for whatever reason. And I think there's a lot of fan pressure on him as well. And so, but I got to think in the second year with those two together that there's got to be an improvement. I mean, Sean looked better until he got hurt, you know, and he did look better than the year before he got hurt. So, you know, we'll see, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. Nick Singleton, I can at least tell you from the workout part of it, works hard. No question about that. This is all based on potential. But what do you think he can do at this level? And maybe what do you think he can do at this level initially in his career?
What I have seen from Nick Singleton and what I know about him, I think he will work as hard as he possibly can, and I'm sure he has already, and he will put himself in the best position to see playing time this year. I can't say he's going to do this or that because I'm not at practice and I'm not one of the coaches. But I think he will do everything he possibly can to put himself in a position to play. I still don't think he will be the starter. I know, you know, again, fans want to see that. I think Kevon Lee will be the starter. And I think you and I talked about this the last time I was on. I mean, Kevon Lee played very well in the Outback Bowl.
He
and
did.
I think he'll be the starter, and frankly, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but I think Nick Singleton will see playing time, and I think he's dynamic. I think he's so singularly focused. All he wants to do is be a great football player. There's no, and this isn't like, it's not about the outside stuff or anything like that. He just wants to be great. He's that competitive.
Right. No, and we're in an era where you don't go in with one running back. You play with two, maybe even three running backs, so the door is open to play.
Yes, yes. And Catron Allen, you know, he may get a shot too because he's highly regarded, you know, coming in this class. So, you know, I know a lot of focus, you know, people mentioning Nick because of all the awards he's won and because he's a Pennsylvania kid.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's room for both of them maybe. You know, who knows? see how this plays out. But I know one thing, too, you know, getting back to Mike Yurcich and James Franklin, they want to run the ball, and they want to run the ball successfully this year. I think you're going to see them commit to that.
Rich, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, my friend. Appreciate you.
Steve, my pleasure. You have a good day.
Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. We'll wrap up the show. Give Matt a little more time to talk about J.D. McKissic and the signing that has swung the balance of power in the NFC in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Does McKissic play for Penn State? No?
No.
I'm worried about you. We're ranting about backup running backs. What are we doing here? Does that tell me that you're out of rants?
No, it's even more of a violation on his part to have the Goulions to back away from one team after you sign a contract and like, oh, sorry, I'm going to go up over here now. Total violation. That's all I'm saying. Other than that, I can care less.
Isn't that the transfer portal?
In a way, yes, but this is actually an agreement with dollars involved here. At least with the transfer portal, those other factors, although, again, there's some violations in there too, in my opinion, but that's a different topic.
So who are you picking tonight? Oh, that's right. You don't even know who's playing tonight because you're so obsessed with the backup running back for the Redskins.
No, I like Rutgers tonight, and I like Wright State tonight.
Yeah, I like Wright State, and I like Notre Dame. Notre Dame's going to have to hit, like I said, the 10-3 mark is the key. They hit the 10-3s. You're talking about 30 points there. That's, you know, they're 14-1 way of 10 or better. They're going to have to do that against team defensive three pretty well. Notre Dame is a four-guard offense. Essentially, Rutgers is a three-guard offense with I really look at Harper as another guard. So Harper, Mulcahy, Geo Baker. You know, Amori is a tough matchup inside. Rutgers does not have much of a bench. But if you stay out of foul trouble, the bench, as I've pointed out many times, is less of an issue because of the length of timeouts and the number of them in the NCAA tournament.
Bottom line, I just want to see good played basketball in these games. Really haven't gotten that, and last night was really no better, especially in the second game, early on in the first half.
But, Matt, the problem is, especially with these games, these teams have had very little rest. They don't have the legs left. I mean, that's a big issue. That's why there are some coaches that over the years that have preferred to lose in the first game of their conference tournament so they could rest their players. I mean, when Penn State played Purdue on Friday night, Purdue was their first game of the tournament. They were fresh. Penn State was tired. I mean, and that's, you know, based on record, that's where it should be.